If you really want to understand the MCAT, go check out the MCAT Cars Strategy Course from Jack Wesson. The MCAT is based on critical thinking. The whole test is based on reading. Learn step by step how to read and answer questions. Learn the skills necessary to understand the test. Become objective in your test taking. Learn the patterns and finish the sections on time. Go check out the MCAT Cars Strategy Course at jackwesson.com today. The MCAT Cars Podcast, session number 91. The car section of the MCAT gives thousands of pre-meds nightmares every night. Whether you're an ESL student, lack confidence while reading, or a slow reader like me, Jack Weston and the medical school headquarters are here to help you score higher in every section so you can be confident you're ready to get the MCAT score of your dreams. Welcome to the MCAT Cars Podcast. My name is Dr. Ryan Gray, your host here every week. As always, I'm joined by Jack Weston from jackweston.com. Now, I want to remind you the best way to use this podcast, we talk about this all the time, is to read the passage that we are going to break down in this podcast before you listen to the podcast. Come to your own conclusions. Understand what the author is trying to tell you, both in the actual words that they are using and the tone behind those written words. Understand that. Try to come to your own conclusions and then listen to the podcast. Build those skills first and then listen. Let's go ahead and jump in. Say hello to Jack again from jackweston.com. Jack Weston back for some more MCAT Cars, amazing MCAT Cars podcast. A spectacular MCAT Cars podcast. I think we should open up to help with vocabulary with a new adjective on what this podcast is for people.
Yeah, go whatever adjective you want to use. I'm for
the splendiferous MCAT Cars podcast.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right, what's going on today? I'm excited here. I see gravity and grace. I have no idea what that is, but that's in the first sentence, and I'm excited.
I think this is, it's a very interesting take on violence. That's the best way to explain it.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. Interesting take on violence.
Yeah.
So a topic that you're probably familiar with, so it's probably going to be an easier read. And usually the easier the read, the more dense the arguments could be, or the more arguments they could have. Yeah. Right? So the more ideas you have to really be aware of. Go ahead. Sorry.
Talk about that for a second. When a student flips the page, so to speak, right? They click that button, go to the next passage, and their immediate reaction is, oh, yay, I know this, or oh, no, I don't know this, or oh, crap, I don't like this. How can you, or what would you say to a student to make sure that they stay at like an even baseline, right? You don't want them to get too excited, like, oh my God, this is my favorite subject. I know everything about this, but also not get too low to go, oh, this is the worst. I hate this topic.
To me, you're characterizing an emotional student, and an emotional student never does well. Mm. They're not going to get a 129, 130 if they act like that or if they think that way.
Yeah.
I think I'm coming from the perspective of high scoring students. They'll look at the passage and go, okay, what do I need to learn? What am I reading? Yeah. They don't comment on, oh, this is hard, this is easy while they're reading. That's distracting.
Yeah.
Right. It's not like, imagine you're a doctor and you go into your patient's room. And the first thing you think is, wow, this patient's annoying.
Oh, wait, we're not supposed to do that?
Your job is just listen to the patient and give them what, you know, give them help. Help them out. Listen to them. Yeah. Why are you, you know, don't comment on the passage. I don't care if you like it or don't like it. You know what I mean? That's not your job.
Yeah.
And if you bring that into the table, you're distracting yourself onto the table. You're just making things harder. Mm. So if you do have an inherent weakness, don't take the test. It's as easy as that. You know, if you show me a random passage on art, I'm not artistic by any means. I'll pay attention. I'm not great at art, but I can pay attention, right? If you show me a passage on history, I like history, so it's easier for me to read it. but I'm not going to get super duper happy or you know, elated over it. I just do my job, right? Just read it. So if you do find that there are certain passage topics that you're weaker on, like I always say, don't neglect them. Don't shrug them off and brush them under the rug, right? Do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
Read more of those kinds of passages. You shouldn't have those kinds of feelings of, oh, I'm weak. I don't know. Hopefully I'll get lucky and I don't get these passages on my test day. Can't think that way. You know, like it's like going into a physics test, you know, on like kinematics and knowing only half the equations.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, good luck with that. Right.
good luck.
It's not going to work. It's not going to work. You don't take the test until you're ready. I don't care if your test date is is in 2 weeks or in a month and you have to apply this season. You're setting yourself up for failure.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, obviously no one's going to be perfect. No one's going to know everything 100%. No one's going to be 100% prepared, but there is a threshold, right? A baseline where you can go, okay, I'm happy with this score. I'm happy with where I'm at. I'll take it. I'll go with it. I think you have to get to that before you take the test.
Yeah. Whew. All right. So some tips there. Don't go in prejudging your patients. I mean, your passages.
Just do your job. Just read, man.
Yeah. I like it. All right. If you want to follow along, and what we recommend definitely is pre-reading before you listen to us go through these passages, pre-read it, come up with your own conclusions, your own thoughts, and then listen to us break it down and see where you went right and where you potentially went wrong and how you can improve. So follow along in the show notes. We'll have a link to this article and to the text as well. All right, first paragraph. In Gravity and Grace, Simone Weil, draws an explicit link between aesthetic and physical violence, writing, quote, "Even in my worst moments, I would not destroy a Greek statue or fresco by Giotto." All right, so we're given here a piece of work. Gravity and Grace is in italics. We're given an author here, Simone Weil. And what she's writing here, between aesthetic and physical violence, in my worst moments, I would not destroy a Greek statue. Okay, so interesting start. We'll see where that goes from there, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you have to know there seems to be a dichotomy that they're presenting, and every passage has this dichotomy, right? So in this case, we're talking about the aesthetic and the physical. Mm-hmm. Aesthetic sounds like art. Physical sounds like literal, right? Physical, actual violence. So we'll have to see where they're going with this. It does say, in my worst moments, I would not destroy a Greek. So that seems like the physical, a Greek statue or a fresco by Giotto. I don't know who Giotto is, but maybe they have violent aesthetics. You know, they portray violence in some ways. I don't know exactly what's going on, but that's okay.
Yep.
You know, you just have to keep greeting, and hopefully it clears it up for you.
Yep. All right, so the quote here continues, "Why anything else then?" All right, so this writer, Simone Weil, continuing her thought, "Why anything else then?" I don't know. It's a very short sentence to really glean anything from, although she's setting up this question, this conversation. Why, for example, a moment in the life of a human being, who could have been happy for that moment? Wow. Why, for example, a moment in the life of a human being who could have been happy for that moment? I have no idea what that means.
You know, as long as you know we're still focused on the physical and the aesthetic kind of connection, aesthetic kind of connection,
yep.
It says explicit link. That's enough. Let's keep reading. Let's see where it's going.
Okay. All right, so that was the end of the quote there. In this view, violence splinters the world and leaves trauma in its wake. All right, so the author here is giving us their view of violence. It splinters the world and leaves trauma in its wake. It is no surprise that proto-fascists like Gabriele D'Annunzio and the Italian futurists elevated violence to a kind of sublime aesthetic force. All right, so the author here talking about this proto-fascists, whatever that means. I know what fascists are. So proto-fascists, I'm assuming that's pro-fascist, maybe. And we're given a name here, Gabriele D'Annunzio, an Italian futurist, and how they elevated violence to a kind of sublime aesthetic force. Like, they liked violence. They wanted violence to be seen as good because they wanted to leave trauma in its wake, maybe? I don't know.
Okay, so this is a harder sentence to understand. There's a bunch of long names here, right? Or one, at least one long name. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's saying, you know, this kind of artist is sort of elevating violence, right? So it's, again, linking violence in terms of physical and aesthetic. So let's keep reading and let's see if they clear it up a little bit more. But we do know we're talking about an artist, at least to some extent.
Yep. For them, extreme actions had become necessary to achieve individual fulfillment in a hopelessly decadent world. All right. So extreme actions, I'm assuming, is the violence that they're talking about, and how violence was necessary to achieve individual fulfillment. So that's how they saw fulfillment in this hopelessly decadent world. The hopelessly decadent, I'm assuming, is talking about the aesthetic world, right? The art.
Yeah. So, you know, I'll take that back. We don't necessarily know just yet who these people are, whether they're politicians or artists, but you should know that they're focused on violence, right? That they do use violence to further their cause.
Yeah. Ooh. All right. That's a hard first paragraph. So I'm going to not be emotional. I'm going to keep reading and try to learn.
That's it. That's all you're supposed to do. You know, we don't want to comment and go, oh, this author, I don't like him.
I don't like him. This is horrible. Yeah. I don't get it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, no attitude is necessary. All you got to do is just keep reading and hopefully it'll clear it up. And just because you don't know something doesn't mean that you're going to miss the questions. It just means you have to keep reading.
Yep. All right. Next paragraph. Even today, many artists are tempted to envision a world transformed by dramatic violence. All right, so we had this kind of Greek statue back in the past, but now even today, artists are tempted to envision a world transformed by dramatic violence, whatever that means. So it's like the author here basically seems like the author here is saying that artists like to portray violence.
Yeah, again, same thing, kind of like what we were talking about before. So they're trying to envision a world with violence in it, and that's how they draw, that's how they're painting or doing whatever they're doing.
Don DeLillo posited terrorism as, quote, the only meaningful act in Mao 2. All right, so here an artist, Don DeLillo, and terrorism as, quote, the only meaningful act. And then Mao 2 is here, italicized, whatever that is. I don't know. But
probably be a piece of work.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yep. So just an example of these artists envisioning dramatic violence.
Good.
Mary Lynn Robinson has said that her students at the Iowa Writers Workshop often enjoyed punishing their characters. Right, so again, right, this violence punishing characters.
Good. These are all just examples, right? And usually when you see that we're all in the same direction, just keep reading, right? Visualize it all, try to understand it, absorb it. Yeah. Mm.
And Ida Jessen, a writer who has translated Robinson into Danish, told me something similar last fall, that the highest aspiration of modernism is cruelty. Okay, so just another example here, which is weird.
Well, it's basically suggesting that now, right, if you're thinking about the modern era, if you want to be more modern, you have to be more cruel. So I guess modernity, right, the idea of modern is very well situated with cruelty. It's very well associated to cruelty, right? So violence, okay?
Even Krasnohorsky's latest work often falls prey to a spiteful irony where no good intention exists but to be thwarted. All right, so again, just another example here. I'm assuming Russian or Czechoslovakian type name here. Latest work falls prey to this cruelty of modernism.
Okay. Yeah. Same thing. Harder to understand, but basically you have to, it's ironic because in order to discuss how there's no good intention, it, you know, we have to kind of thwart it. So in some ways there's violence associated to it. Mm-hmm. But again, that's too deep. Just understand that this is all falling under the same category.
Yep. All right. Ooh. Wiles seems lonely in her Avawal. Quote, to sully nothing, even in thought. All right. So we're brought back here to Simone Weil, the person in this Gravity and Grace that we started with. And the author here is saying that Weil seems lonely in her Avawal. I don't know what Avawal means. But the quote here, to sully nothing even in thought. It seems like Weil, the example here is that Weil is not for this cruelty or violence because it's to sully nothing, right? Seems peaceful and nice.
Well, I don't want you to go too deep into this. As long as you know, these are all sort of actually trying to exemplify violence in art today. That's what the first sentence of this paragraph said, and that's what we're trying to continue with.
Okay.
Unless it says this is wrong in a very direct, explicit sense, we could probably assume that this is all falling under the same category so far.
Yep. Okay. All right.
Yeah. So I like how you're trying really hard to understand what this quote means, but it's not worth our time. It's not worth our energy. And a lot of the times I have students who ask, well, how can I conserve my time and also my energy? How can I stay focused? Well, don't focus on the wrong things, right? Yeah. Focus on the right things, because that way you have energy. And if you have energy, you'll read in a more efficient manner to finish the test.
Yeah. Okay. All right. That's a hard one there. Okay. Anyone who makes violent art, no matter how finely wrought, runs the risk of creating a demon. Ooh. All right. So this whole paragraph is really hard, but I think as you said, really the whole goal of this is the kind of correlation between artists and violence.
Correct. This does present a new point, though. This is a very important point. The whole paragraph was talking about how today these artists are focused on violence. But what does this last sentence convey or point out?
That it runs the risk of creating a demon.
Yeah. So maybe the viewer of the art ends up being the demon.
Mm.
Does that make sense? It causes a negative effect.
See, it all goes right back to violent video games.
That's what, yeah, that's a typical way of looking at this. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Good. Why couldn't they just talk about video games? Right?
Why couldn't they talk about video games? Exactly. All right. So still super confused. Not going to be emotional. Going to keep reading. Try to learn. Try to pick apart. All right. So next paragraph here. This is especially true when that art deals with real life atrocities. All right. So potentially bringing in some more artwork and more tie-ins to real life here.
Okay.
In an interview around his 2012 film Armor, the Austrian director Michael Haneke presented a critique of Steven Spielberg's Schindler's List and other films about the Holocaust. All right, so obviously an example here of a real-life atrocity, the Holocaust. And
what's the art? What's the art in this?
The
case?
Movie. So Schindler's List, the movie about
exactly.
It.
Exactly. Good. And it's quoted and it's italicized, excuse me. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a piece of work. It's an art. It's it's a movie, even though, you know, most people don't see that as art. It is art.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. To create suspense around whether gas or water will come out of a showerhead, according to Haneke, is an, quote, unspeakable act that reduces human suffering to a form of entertainment. All right. So, again, this tying art into violence and art into this kind of cruelty. This, the director here talking about Schindler's List and how we basically, what he says, reduced human suffering to entertainment, like building suspense on this human suffering.
Yeah. So does the author like this fact or not? Or this opinion or not like it?
I don't know.
Well, it says reduces. If you reduce human suffering, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Yeah, no, it's not a good thing.
You don't want to just convey human suffering in terms of entertainment. That's a bad thing.
Yeah. The reason I said I don't know, really to help the reader and listener of this, is it says, according to Haneke, it reduces human suffering. So you asked about the author. So that's where I said I don't know.
Okay. That's a great point. How do we know that the author is most likely adopting Haneke's point of view? Well, in the second paragraph, it ends by suggesting that anyone who makes violent art, no matter how finely wrought, and in this case, Steven Spielberg, right, runs the risk of creating a demon. That is the author's point of view. It's not quoting someone else.
Yeah.
So this idea that if you make art about, you know, just violence, you do bad things. You're creating a demon. No one wants a demon, right? And you can probably assume that the author agrees with Haneke, or else why else would the author bring up Haneke?
Yeah.
And doesn't Haneke's point kind of complement the point the author
confirmation
made?
Confirmation bias.
Right. Yeah. But, you know, in this case, it is confirmation bias. Yeah, exactly. The author is trying to convince themselves that they're right.
Yep.
And in doing so, they want to convince you.
Yep. Makes sense. Okay.
Cool. And I hate this idea because I'm so fascinated by movies that convey these atrocities, because I think they bring, in my opinion, they bring to terms in real life what could happen in the future, right? Mm. So I don't believe the author at all. I think the author's totally wrong about this. I think, if anything, enacting violence, right, in movies is a wake-up call. It helps us understand how we should behave and how things can get real bad if we're not careful and if we're not active in our opinions and take it into our own hands.
Yeah. Yeah. Whew. All right. Next paragraph here. I returned to this interview a few months ago when Amazon released the neo-exploitation series Hunters on its streaming service. All right, so the author here talking about going back to the interview, I'm assuming, with Michael Haneke here, and why the author went back to that interview talking about this neo-exploitation series Hunters on its streaming service. I don't know what Hunters is, but obviously it seems like a TV show here. It's a series, Hunters.
Right. Neo exploitation. Does that sound like a good thing or a bad thing?
It doesn't sound good. Exploitation is not a good word. Neo, right. I'm assuming, is just a new version of exploitation.
Exactly. Oh. Yeah. So the author is definitely negative towards this. Go ahead.
Hunters reimagines the hunt for Nazi fugitives as a kind of high camp. It's cast stocked full of every imaginable grindhouse archetype. All right, so the author here telling us what Hunters is, right? The hunt for Nazi fugitives. I don't know what high camp is, what that means, but the cast stocked full of every imaginable grindhouse archetype. Grindhouse, I think, is not a good, like, that's just a violence kind of scene, grindhouse. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, not that important. As long as you know we're talking about this new show and how it's conveying these normative or normal kind of characters, right, that you would suggest, that you would assume.
Yeah. Every gesture seems secondhand. Okay. I don't know what that means. Gesture of who? The characters, I'm assuming. And then secondhand, I don't know what that would mean in a show here.
Probably negative. No one wants to be second-handed, right? Okay.
But as it cuts between 1970s New York and the death camp at Auschwitz, the show descends to a level of stupidity not even camp can justify. All right. So high camp. I'm assuming they're talking about like being campy, which I don't know what that means. I just know it's a word to describe something silly or corny or I don't maybe. So a level of stupidity. Obviously, we're getting this kind of idea that the author doesn't like this show at all, right? It descends to a level of stupidity. Not even camp right. can justify.
Yeah. And a lot of students ask me, how do I know the tone? Well, look at these words, yeah. right? So these words give you a big indication that the author is negative in tone.
Yeah.
So look for these extreme words.
Okay. Ooh, all right. When a band of Jewish musicians switches from Wagner to folk music, they are executed on the spot. Okay, so... just an example here of this violence.
Yeah, and the author thinks that this is just entertainment, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's reduced to entertainment, which the author doesn't like. And it's an example of it in this show, Hunters, okay? Yeah.
A chess prodigy is forced to play against an SS commander with Jewish prisoners as the chess pieces. All right, so again, just this human suffering is entertainment.
Yeah, and that's unimaginable.
Not cool. Yeah. And the entire plot hinges around a maniacal Nazi, the Wolf, a genius so devious he spends the entire show hiding in plain sight. All right, so again, just an evil person, right? This Wolf, a genius, but he's hiding in plain sight, so it's fun and entertaining.
Yep, and the author is negative the whole time, right? Yeah. Doesn't like the show, doesn't think the show's doing any good, right? If anything, it's actually hurting us, right? Mm-hmm. That's what the author is trying to suggest, okay?
All right, next paragraph. I'm not the first person to find the show distasteful. The Auschwitz Memorial registered a complaint early on. All right, so the author here saying, okay, other people don't like it either. And obviously this official... memorial for Auschwitz as well.
Right. And this further justifies their claim, yep. right? It validates them. Okay.
Yep. I am not even the first to note how incredibly tacky it all is. All right. So again, tacky, campy, I think the high camp kind of label here as well. But it occurred to me recently that the outrageous images in Hunters serve as a kind of shield against the true horrors of the Holocaust. All right, so it seems like there's a little bit of a switch here in the author's tone, right? It occurred to me recently, these outrageous images, this human suffering reduced to entertainment, shields against the true horrors of the Holocaust. So it seems like the author here is saying, well, maybe it serves a purpose somehow.
Well, I don't know. If I were to read this and it says, but, right, that's a contrast word.
Yeah.
So many times students will go, okay, if I see a contrast word, it's flipping the idea, right? Like it's going from, oh, it's a little tacky to maybe it's not tacky. Maybe it's actually kind of good, right? But it could go from it's a little tacky to it's really, really bad.
Yeah.
So you don't have to contrast to the exact opposite. It could contrast in a more extreme manner.
Mm.
So, like, for instance, if I said, this is really, this is boring, but it's also extremely stupid, right? So, like, I'm using the contrast to further myself from tacky and to get to even of a more extreme negative. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That's what the author is probably trying to do here. I doubt the author is going to go and say something positive right after saying, oh, this is stupid, right?
Mm.
Okay, but go ahead.
The show elevates the perpetrators of this world historic crime to the status of fascinating arch villains while reducing its victims to plot devices. All right, so the show elevates the perpetrators, fascinating arch villains, okay, while reducing its victims to plot devices, right? So talking about reducing human suffering to a form of entertainment. They're using the victims as plot devices. I don't know how this is expanding on the shielding against the true horrors.
Well, this is shielding away because one, it's making these villains seem fascinating, right? It's painting these villains in a more positive way. So it's shielding us from the actual horror that, you know, these villains really are, right? These villains shouldn't be seen in this fascinating way. They shouldn't be seen as these kind of villains that we can all talk about. We should be seeing them as cruel people and for people who they, you know, who they represent, these negative, really bad, atrocious people.
Yeah.
So I think that's what the author's trying to suggest. It's, and again, going back to this idea that it's a form of entertainment. It's reducing it to a form of entertainment. And we're not appreciating the actual horror, right? Yeah. We're not actually taking that into account. I think that's what the author is really trying to say here.
Yeah, so I would agree. Reading back, right, the shield against the true horrors, the author is saying that's a bad thing, right? We need to remember the true horrors so that we don't repeat them, basically.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And that's what the next sentence actually shows us.
Yep.
Right, and it says it's reducing its victims. Again, reducing is not a good thing.
Yep.
To plot devices. So it's not focused on the victims. It's focused on the villains.
Yeah.
Right? And these victims are not really appreciated. They're just there to kind of further the plot, right? And I think that's what the author is trying to say. Notice, I don't agree with the author at all, but that doesn't mean I shouldn't understand the author. I shouldn't be empathetic towards the author, right? So many times you'll have students who will read something and go, I don't like that. And they won't read it the right way. They'll just keep attacking it. I can do both, right? I want to understand it fully, and then I'll make my decision on it. I'll make my own opinion about it, right? So I think that's really, really important. So when you're reading, you may not agree with this author, but that doesn't mean you should not respect them and listen to them and understand them.
Yeah. Okay, that's interesting. All right, it is unspeakable to use Haneke's word. All right, so just talking about the whole shielding and making these horrific people into fascinating archvillains. It's unspeakable. It is also ridiculous. All right, so the author here seems like they're getting their point across.
Good. Yeah, unspeakable, ridiculous, stupid. It's very obvious the author does not like it when we use violence for aesthetic purposes, especially real life atrocities.
Yep.
I think that's the main idea. And if you know that this is reducing it to a form of entertainment, even better. And you're not going to miss any questions if you know all that, right? You're going to get everything right, pretty much.
Yeah.
So great. And especially if you know the tone is negative. So if you know the tone is negative and you know everything I just said, you're set. And the hard part is deciphering that when you read the first two paragraphs, and the first two paragraphs are nonsense, are really hard to understand.
Yeah.
Right. But notice the end of the second paragraph is where things started to make sense.
Yep.
And that's typically what happens is if the paragraph is deep, usually the last sentence summarizes what they care about, or midway through, they'll start talking like a normal person. So that doesn't mean you should give up. It doesn't mean you should skip the first two paragraphs. I'm not suggesting that at all. I'm just saying, just keep going. Don't give up, right? And if you keep reading, you're going to start noticing what really matters. And that's the key. That's everything.
All right, so there you have it. Again, Jack from jackwesson.com with another amazing MCAT Cars episode for you. I get so many great notes from students, and if you are one of those students who uses this podcast or has used this podcast to improve your MCAT Cars skills and your section score, let me know. Just shoot me a DM over on Instagram, my medical school HQ over on Instagram. If you don't follow me over there, you should. That's where you can find me. Again, Medical School HQ. Say hello. Let me know how this podcast is treating you. Don't forget to check out jackwesson.com for all of the latest and greatest that Jack Wesson has to offer you, including the trial sessions that Jack has set up. Go check them out. Again, jackwesson.com. Have a great week. We'll see you next time here on the MCAT Cars Podcast.
This is MedEd Media.